Welcome to the 45th episode of It Wasn't Me, a true crime podcast where we discuss murders that intrigue us. I am Cindy.
And I'm Mercedes. Thanks for listening to last week's episode where I detailed the abduction and presumed death of Jennifer Dulose.
Our show is often horrifying and graphic, and we will use offensive language. So if you have kids, put them away for a while and join us for a murder. Also, we are passionate and always have been about true crime. But we must warn you, we do sometimes make jokes and we will laugh during this podcast.
Want to learn more about us? Visit our website at itwasn'tmetruecrime.com to find links to our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. If you like what you hear and you'd like to help us out, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform and leave us a 5-star rating along with a comment. Also, please recommend our podcast to your friends. The more the merrier.
Hi, Mercedes.
Hi, Cindy. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Oh, good. How was your week?
It was good.
Yeah?
My daughter had a baby yesterday.
Congratulations, Yaya.
Thank you.
Ella Grace, right? How much did she weigh?
She was 6 pounds, 2 ounces.
Oh, so sweet. In the picture, she's going to be a gifted child. I can tell by looking at her.
I just want to hold her.
Yeah, well, you know.
Give me the baby.
You're going to be able to see the baby when you when your daughter goes home, right? Yes. You're going to go over there? Okay. Aw, so sweet.
I know.
Aw, well, congratulations.
Thank you. At least we had something, you know, yay about.
Yay. Aw. Yeah. It's been an exhausting week for me, you know, going back to work, finally.
Finally, yes.
Crazy.
So tired.
Yeah. So you want to tell everybody about our 50th episode giveaway?
Yes. We are, as Mercedes just said, giving away some goodies for our 50th episode. So if you're interested in qualifying for It Wasn't Me goodie bag, this is what you need to do before September 6th.
Time is running out.
Yes. One, give us a 5-star rating with a comment, screenshot it after you've posted it. Email that screenshot to us at atruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. Include the following in your email: a screenshot of your rating, your shirt size, and your mailing address. Listen to the 50th episode, which will air October 2nd, 2020, to hear if you are one of our lucky winners.
Yay!
I almost said wucky winners.
Wucky winners.
I haven't even had any wine yet.
Not yet, but you have a glass, so take a sip. All right, so I hear you have a really good one for us this week.
I think so. There's a lot to it, so please bear with me as I stumble through it.
This one might be a pretty long one, so
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll try to, you know, not go too crazy and try to condense where I can. All right. So this week we are traveling to Wyoming.
Okay. Well, we haven't been to Wyoming yet.
No.
Neither on the podcast nor in person, right?
Right. I would like to go. It looks really pretty.
Yeah. Those are places that my husband likes to go. And when he drags me there, I end up enjoying myself.
Right. But I think we should go here.
It's not on my personal bucket list, right. But I would love to see it.
That's what my children say when I say, I want to go to Deadwood or I want to go to Tombstone. They're like, why? And I'm like, why not?
Well, my oldest son and I had attempted to go to Tombstone one time.
That's right.
And the plane was diverted to Vegas instead. So we ended up going to Vegas, which was a little disappointing.
Yeah, because he was like 10, right?
He was like 10, and he ended up getting heat exhaustion. Like, he got really, really sick. So we were like confined to the hotel for one whole day we were there. But we were going to go to Tombstone. That was on his wish list at one time.
Yeah, I'd like to go. Yeah. I have a friend that's supposed to go during Thanksgiving.
To Wyoming or
no,
to Tombstone?
No, to Tombstone.
Okay.
They're going to a dude ranch.
Oh, dudes.
Dudes. All right. Okay. So in Wyoming, the population is rather small in comparison to like the land area, how big the state is.
Uh-huh.
So from my research, the population is a little less than 600,000.
For the entire state.
That's what Google told me. Oh. Yes, for the entire state.
Okay.
But the land area makes Wyoming the 10th largest state.
Wow.
So there's not a whole lot of people on, they're very sparse and they have small towns and... you know, that sort of
thing.
So when you think of Wyoming, what do you think about?
I think of snow.
Okay.
And horses and ranches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And mountains.
Yes.
Okay.
Wyoming is known for a lot of things, but rampant crime is truly not one of them. So this is why the state was in utter shock when this whole shit went down.
Okay.
And it was some shit. Okay. So Mark A. Hopkinson started a life of crime in Sleepy Uinta County.
Okay. Never heard of Mark A. Hopkinson, mm-hmm. and you're pronouncing it Uinta, and I might pronounce it Winta.
I have no
but
idea.
But who the hell knows? It's U-I-N-T-A.
All right, so Mark Allen Hopkinson was born October 8th, 1946 in Evanston, Wyoming. He was born to a Joe and Norma Jean Hopkinson and had three siblings on a very small ranch where they were very involved in their Mormon church. That really doesn't have anything to do with the story at all, their religion. It was just part of the information. So,
but they're kind of like, you know, just a decent Mormon family who do, you know, that's what I'm guessing. So awesome. That would make it even more shocking if this
Yeah, because they're just not used to this kind of behavior.
Right.
So Mark was very intelligent, cunning, and manipulative, which sometimes that all goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're very intelligent and cunning, sometimes you can be very manipulative, whether you're it's for evil or not sometimes, you know. It is said that his father was abusive, but Mark rarely was the recipient of this abuse because, well, he would just charm his way out of a good ass beating.
Okay.
He was so good that he was able to manipulate his parents and grandparents into overlooking practically everything he did, whether it was stealing, bullying, or cheating. According to this blog I came across, Evil in the Heartland, Mark thought he was above the rules. He was not required to abide by the same rules and restrictions as everyone else on the planet, apparently. Rules were beneath him. He would later say that, you know, he would believe that laws were beneath him as well.
And these are all conditions of psychopathy, sociopathy. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing he's a psychopath or a sociopath. Mm-hmm. They truly believe that they're above everyone else.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. So because of this, you know, he believed this, he believed that he deserved whatever it is that he wanted at any time that he wanted it.
Okay.
So it's mine. I'm going to take it against all cost.
All right.
Because whatever you have to say doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your rules are.
Right.
So Mark was very popular and a very talented athlete as well. He was tall, dark, and handsome, supposedly. I don't know. I looked at his pictures. I didn't think so.
You didn't think so?
No, but it was the 70s.
Okay.
When he gets arrested.
So the guys in the 70s, you just didn't like that look?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was just like, he had that...
I'll look at a picture later.
He was highly, like I said, he was already highly intelligent and incredibly charming. To say charming, to me, puts like a positive connotation on being manipulative. Like, he was really charming.
Yeah.
But he really wasn't a good dude. So
charming, like, to me, charming can have, charming to me does kind of mean manipulative. Like,
I guess it depends on how you're using it.
Okay.
So I don't like considering him charming because they're like, oh, he's tall, dark, handsome, super intelligent, and so incredibly charming.
Yeah.
To me, I'm like, oh, so he might have been a good guy. You know,
those people put my hackles. They set my hackles.
Okay. So it is frightening that someone like him was a role model for other boys.
Okay.
Because he was a subject of attention and affection from young girls. And even his teachers were just like, oh, Mark, you're such a good kid. You know, and you know, sometimes you see teachers who love those kids and you're like,
yeah,
really? Do they not?
He's a slimy bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he had the adoration of lots of his teachers. He would often receive special treatment from said teachers because of his positive qualities.
So he knew how to fake it in front of people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He was always polite, friendly, easygoing, entertaining, and talkative.
Okay.
I mean, he was just, you know, he knew how to turn it off, but he could turn it off, you know, turn it on and turn it off.
Okay.
However, he had a very dark side also.
Ooh, you're going to tell us about that, I'm sure.
Okay. So underneath his facade lurked an evil, sadistic, self-serving man with a giant ego, a disregard for any of the well-being of others, and a fondness for violence.
Okay.
He often was a troublemaker at school, but was able to smooth out the situations with his charm. He also was a notorious cheater, a very poor sport, and would become enraged when losing. So there were accounts that he would cheat in like sporting events, and then he would actually get the other people, like his teammates, he would be able to talk them into cheating as well. And it's like, how? I mean, it's very cult-like, like cult leader-like.
Huh.
Because he was able to get people to do his bidding for him a lot of the time.
Interesting.
He was a textbook
psychopath. Called that one. Okay.
According to reports, Mark would enjoy inflicting pain on others and making them bend to his will. Mark also loved guns. However, not so much in a positive way. He, you know, being that Wyoming, there's lots of gun-toting, gun-loving, hunting, you know, ranching type activities. So it's not hard to believe that he was around guns. But he would shoot and kill small, helpless animals for the thrill of it. So like jackrabbits, prairie dogs, chipmunks. He even shot a deer once, but it wasn't for food purposes. He did it for the pure pure thrill of it and left it on the, shot it, killed it, left it on the side of the road.
I imagine there are a lot of people who do that.
Yeah. I mean, my husband likes to hunt, but if he was to, he's going to kill something, he's going to eat it too.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to bring it home. Or right. Have meals, not one or okay. two, we'll have plenty.
Uh-huh.
So by the age of 17, Mark was committing petty crimes and had burglarized several homes, including the one of his best friend. Wow. He was arrested and once again used his charm to talk his way out of a harsh punishment. The judge talked it up to a silly teenage prank.
Boys will be boys.
Yep. He was even able to talk his way into the good graces of his friend and neighbors. So the people that he was breaking into their homes, he was able to like gain their trust again.
Wow.
Enough to be in their homes. I'm like, I don't think so. You break into my... Well, that would be a different episode if you broke into my house.
So, I mean, at this point, he's still a teenager.
Yes.
Wow. So he developed this skill early on.
Yeah. So allegedly, Mark had a habit of luring unsuspected teenage girls into his trailer park. Like his dad owned a trailer park, had his own.
Did they live in a trailer?
I did not see that. Like, okay. I didn't find that information. I mean, they might have, but I know they owned a trailer park. And later... He owns a trailer park.
Okay.
But supposedly he would lure these girls in, drug them, strip them naked, sexually abuse them, take pictures of them, sell the pictures, or use them to blackmail the girls. He was a real piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Real piece of
shit. Oh, yeah. And I know people do that now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So during his senior year, he became a star football player for the high school football team. He even earned a scholarship to the University of Arizona. However, he dropped out of school in the early 1970s.
So he dropped out of high school or he dropped out of college?
College. Okay. He dropped out of college.
So he graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And he went to the University of Arizona, but he ended up dropping out in the early 1970s. And by 1972, he would be arrested in New Hampshire. So he made his way from Arizona to New Hampshire, and he was arrested for possession of marijuana and intent to distribute. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 5 years in prison.
Wow. 5 years for, well, I mean, he's distributing.
Right. So, however, Mark was able to sweet talk his way into having his sentence commuted to just 3 years. And in 1975, he was released from prison and returned to Bridger Valley.
And that's in Wyoming?
Yes.
Okay.
At some point, he got married to a lady named Judy. I tried to find out information about Judy. I was not able, I don't know if I just wasn't looking it up in the correct mm-hmm. fashion, but I could not find any information about her at all. And that's where her story ends in this story.
So, I mean, and it's hard to find women because you don't know what their maiden name was sometimes. Yeah. Or, yeah.
I just said that okay. he married her, showed up with her, and then moved back to Wyoming with her.
Okay, so we don't know anything else Mm-mm. about Judy. All right.
So there's a bit of a background information that I want to cover before we really get into the meat of the case, because I think it has a lot to do with it. I have to set it up.
Okay.
So it's just not like he went and randomly killed these people.
Okay.
So it's quite extensive. So a lot of the information is going to be the setup. As okay. opposed to
the actual murder.
The actual
itself.
Murder, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's got some twists and turns too, but this dude is fucked up.
All right. Let's okay. do this.
So, Mark's father, his name is Joe, became embroiled in a water and property dispute with his neighbors. So in 1974, Joe Hopkinson had been doing work to build a new trailer complex on his property. However, Joe filled a water trench with dirt, and this trench happened to provide the neighbors, the Reutz family, with their water supply. So he filled it up.
Okay.
So they couldn't get their water supply.
Kind of reminds me a little bit about the conflict between Georgia and Florida with the water
Over
supply.
The Aquifer. Right? Right?
What's well, that? their water supply, they blocked the water supply, which mm-hmm. it has done away with the ruined the oyster beds in Apalachicola. But they said, this is our water supply. This is what, you know, the drinking water for Atlanta. Supreme Court has been involved in that case twice. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, water right disputes.
Yep. Ugh. Well, they have something called a water board here, which I go into what that really is.
A water board?
Yeah.
Oh, like a board of like commissioners. A,
yeah.
Like type. Okay.
Yeah, but they call it
I'm
the
like
water
board. Like
waterboarding. Yeah, that's what my husband said. He was okay. like, they waterboarded them? I'm like, no.
Yeah. Right.
So the Reutz family confronted Joe about this issue, and he was like, yeah, kiss my ass. I don't care. So the Reutz family confronted Joe about this issue, and he refused to do anything. So this is the dad, who seems to be quite the asshole as well. And he was like, yeah, I don't care. So the Reutz family eventually took Joe to court for many land and water violations because what he was trying to do, he ultimately wasn't supposed to do if he didn't own that land, is the way I'm understanding it. And I get into it a little bit more. And I had to look it up. So the Reutz family eventually took Joe to court for many of the water and land violations that he was participating in, I guess you would say. I was going to say violating, but I already said that. They would actually win this judgment in 1974. And this was right about the time that Mark was coming home back to Wyoming.
Okay.
Right. Mark took control of the trailer park at this time and vowed revenge against the family that attacked his family.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So where I said he eventually had his own trailer park, he just took control of his dad's at this point. So in around April of 1976, Mark visited the Voigt's family himself. He was very polite and charming, of course, but on the inside, he was seething. He was so pissed that they even messed with him and his family. So he offered to settle with the family, but insisted that he needed to be allowed to continue filling the water ditch with dirt. Well, the family absolutely was opposed to this settlement, and Mark became enraged and started threatening them by saying how easy it would be to inconvenience them if they didn't comply with his demands. Well, the family stood their ground, you know, pretty firmly, and they're like, no, we need our water supply. So they decided to take their case to the Fort Bridger Water Board in the hopes of forcing a judgment against the Hopkinsons. I didn't know what a water board was because we don't have those here. So I do go into like what exactly that consists of.
Okay.
So Mark promised that he was going to get his due justice. He was going to get his revenge on the Voigt's family.
So they're trying to fill in this other family's water supply. So if they're farmers or whatever, they're not able to use any of that water because it's dried up.
Yes, he's trying to, like, fill it with dirt.
But is it on his land?
Well, that's kind of, like, what's up the...
Okay.
It's indifferent. The way the water supplies work in Wyoming is they're set up in different districts. So for him to be able to do anything to that, like, because later he wants to, when he's doing the trailer park, he wants to kind of run all the lines into his trailer park, and they're in different districts. So... but I go into all that.
Okay. Hey, everybody. I wanted to take a moment to tell you about this episode's sponsor, Best Fiends. Best Fiends, that's friends without the R, is a challenging puzzle game everyone is talking about. I love it because it's a perfect break from my true crime research. My brain loves to be challenged, and this game challenges my brain. But it's a casual game, so it's super relaxing. My son and I have been using Best Fiends as a fun way to connect. It's fun to casually compete with him. This mobile puzzle game is a 5-star rated app with over 100 million downloads, thousands of fun levels, and tons of super cute characters to collect. I virtually have access to a whole beautiful world right on my phone. It's bright and colorful with great graphics, and there's a story about each of these cute characters. I just unlocked Napoleon. He's the cutest little French roach you've ever seen. He has a cute little thimble crown and a matchstick scepter, but his area bomb will clear the board. New in-game challenges and events every month makes the game fresh and exciting every time you play. You'll never be bored. You can even play the game without using Wi-Fi. No bandwidth? No problem. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on this game. So join me, my friends and family, and millions of Americans who are already playing this fun puzzle game. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Around May 6, 1976, Frank Voigt and his daughter, Arlene, were enjoying a nice lunch together when they noticed that Mark was, like, circling the area in his vehicle, like, stalking them. And so Frank finally got fed up with the harassment and wanted all this to end. So he walked outside to meet Mark face to face. He said, "When are you moving that son of a bitch?" Mark yelled, angrily pointing to the Voigt's trailer. "That's none of your damn business," replied Frank. Mark was furious. "Get that goddamn trailer off my property," he snarled. "I mean, I'm a mean son of a bitch when I'm mad." Frank didn't give in. "So am I," he defiantly sneered into the Hopkinson's face. "Bring it on, pal."
Okay, so the Voigt's trailer is on the Hopkinson's property?
That's the way it makes it sound. And all the things that I've looked researched, it doesn't necessarily say.
So it's a property dispute. It would be kind of like, well, didn't you have this problem where the neighbor said that his, it might have been somebody else. They said their neighbor had like planted bushes 3 feet into their yard. It's like, no, I don't want those bushes on my property.
Oh,
so
no,
it's a property dispute.
No, we have a thing in my neighborhood right now where whoever developed the land and when the houses were sold on one side of the road, they gave them the wrong address.
Ooh.
Like, so we might have to change our address because this other guy who just came in and bought up like 4 lots.
So where they're building the house next to you?
Yeah.
So then
he's like, that's supposed to be my address. This is supposed to be your address.
Oh, well. Good God. Okay.
Yeah.
mean, it seems rather petty, but if the trailer is on his property, I can see, gosh, and you know, you see these kinds of disputes all the time.
Right, but if it's a trailer park, are they, like, I mean...
Is his trailer on the Hawkinson's land? That's my question, yeah. But... Okay.
But they take some of this, they're trying to take it to court because it's all property and water disputing.
Okay.
But itching for a fight, Hopkinson continued his tough guy approach. You mess with me, he growled, and then you'll find out yourself. Then Reutz egged him on by saying, I'm not scared, come and get me.
So male egos are in the mix, which is never good, especially when you're talking about property disputes or territorial.
Right.
I mean, dudes get upset if somebody takes their parking spot.
Really? Yeah, they do.
Okay.
All right. So this is when Mark's father, so they're having this, you know, this argument out in front of the Reutz's house, and Mark's father comes up behind Frank Reutz and hit him on the head with a hammer.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Frank fell to the ground and Mark proceeded to just beat him. Frank's daughter rushed outside and swung a shovel at Mark. Mark punched Arlene in the stomach. She distracted him enough for her father to get up and run away and call for help.
Oh my God.
Unfortunately, yeah. So unfortunately, Mark unleashed his rage on a pregnant Arlene. She was pregnant, and he was like punching her in the stomach.
Oh my God!
Yeah, he brutally beat her. Frank and Arlene.
Ooh, I like that beatily.
Brutally.
It's like brutal and beat together. Okay.
Frank and Arlene tried to file charges against Mark for the assault, but like a lot of small towns, everyone knows everyone. The county attorney was friends with Mark and refused to press charges.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Jim Phillips was his name. County attorney also refused to take the Reutz side on the water lawsuit. So what is a water board? Well, according to something in Google, the State Board of Control is a quasi-judicial body that's with sole jurisdiction in the three A's of water rights: adjudication, administration, and amendments. The State Board of Control is the state engineer and superintendents for each water division of the state. The State Board of Control meets quarterly during the year to discuss petitions and proofs and like lawsuits and disputes and that sort of thing. Wyoming is divided into four different divisions for administration purposes. Each of these divisions is headed by a superintendent. And later I mentioned districts. And so that's why I went back and was like, I don't understand this whole water district thing. And that's because they're set up in those four different districts. All right, so the adjudication procedure involves a field inspection to ensure that water is being put to a beneficial use as specified under a certain kind of permit. We don't really control any of that here in where
we
live.
Well, it's just, I mean, Wyoming is huge land. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all put together. We're all in close proximity of each other. So I guess our municipality takes care of the water rights.
Yeah.
But I would imagine in a rural area, you know, if you have a body of water going through your property, even though it's on your property, I mean, you couldn't stop the flow of that water.
Well, you know, I've been watching Yellowstone.
Okay.
The TV show Yellowstone.
Which is fiction, by the way.
Right. No, but in it, someone has this like stream running through their property, and it's going to be the water supply for these other people coming in trying to build like a casino and stuff. Uh-huh. So he owns like all this, like more land than anyone else does in Montana or whatever. Okay. And he like actually diverts it.
Yeah.
So that water supply is not going to where the people who bought the land next to him could use it. And then I also, there's a show called Goliath, and their third season was all about a water dispute and a water board. And I was like, what? So the shit, like, I thought it was just all fiction. And it's, you know, these big people come in with all this money and they use the water for their own purpose. You know, we're kind of experiencing some corruption, I guess. So they're corrupt with the water because out in this area, especially like in California and all of these drier areas, there's droughts.
Yes.
So the water has to be maintained.
Right.
More so than, I guess, when what we're
accustomed to. Because if you think about the, you know, water supply, a stream travels down river or whatever, a river, if you stop it, you're taking away from somebody else's livelihood.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, hundreds of miles away from me.
I mean, I know.
Which is the Atlanta, Florida issue.
Right. When we lived down south, I remember we could only, depending on your house number, you could only use water, like water your grass on even days.
Right.
Or odd, you know, you couldn't do it just whenever you wanted to.
And California is like that too. And I remember here they have done that, like when we're, you know.
Like in a drought?
When a drought, yeah.
Okay. All right, so that's my little spiel on the water board.
Okay, so for clarification, the dad was hit in the head with a hammer and the daughter was beaten while she was pregnant.
Yep.
No one was arrested for that assault, even though they were on the the Royce's property?
This is correct. No one, but because the county attorney was friends with Mark.
Okay, so no one is, and well, then again, there's a dispute between whose property it is. So, okay.
So after the attorney's refusal to press charges and or assist the Royces with their land dispute, Mark took this as a sign of, I can do whatever I want, because his buddy, the lawyer, was on his side. So he continued on with building his trailer park even more. Mark wanted all of the sewer lines in the area to be hooked up to his own district, but many of those sewer lines were connected on separate sewer districts and one that his family didn't own.
Okay.
So he found this not to be too troublesome, for he would just buy the property and integrate it into his own property.
Okay.
But Frank Royce was like, I don't fucking think so, dude.
I'm not selling my property. Is right. that what he's saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he was not having this at all. So he contacted a different lawyer named Vincent Villar.
Vahar is how I would say it.
Vahar. So he contacted this gentleman. So Vincent was all too aware of both Hopkinson men. He knew Mark to be aggressive, egotistical, and a psychopathic bully that would do whatever needed to get what he wanted. And he was determined that he was going to be the guy to stop him.
So he's going
to
be the David against this Goliath.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
So Vincent took the legal complaint to the water board along with a public petition to stop Mark. So
a public petition. Mm-hmm. So he got a lot of people to sign a petition.
Yeah. So after negotiations, the board granted Mark the right to buy and integrate the district, but it would cost him 3 times the normal fee to do so. And so he begrudgingly, he settled.
Okay. Okay. I think I'm following you. My question is, you know, this guy seems super charming and everything, but to me, if there's a public petition, people are not finding him as charming as maybe they're just slightly afraid of him.
Probably.
Afraid to go against him. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because by this point, they know he beat this guy, he beat this woman. You know, I mean, it's a small area, not a lot of people. So
and
everybody
they've been
knows
dealing
everything.
With him since he was a teenager.
Right.
Jeez. Okay.
So Mark went ahead with his plan and started hooking up the sewer lines to his trailer park. He openly defied the settlement agreement and refused to pay the $12,300 hookup fee once the construction work had been completed. That's a lot of money.
Well, yeah, I mean...
And they were charging him 3 times the amount.
Which is unfair, I think, but then again,
that
who
was
knows?
The,
yeah, that was the... He agreed to it, yeah. So he should pay it.
So once again, Mark thought that the law was beneath him and that he didn't have to comply with the demands of the town or the water board. The water board had had enough, and they informed Mark that he could face legal action if he did not pay the money that he owed. But he didn't care. So after, you know, this, as you can imagine, after what little bit I've told you about Mark, this probably really enraged him even more. All opposing parties, meaning the water board members, the lawyer, they all started receiving death threats and were constantly harassed by Mark, even openly. He would follow them in his car, similar to what he did to Frank Royce and his daughter, you know, circling. He would follow them in the car, stalk them day in and day out. Board members would come home and see that their windows had been, they had holes in their windows, like from a BB gun.
Holy shit.
While other members would find threatening notes on their doorsteps.
Wow.
Yeah, this guy was like
psycho.
A fucking lunatic.
Yeah.
So after weeks and weeks of this, the board members finally filed a lawsuit against Mark on June 28th, 1977. So who do you think was representing them?
Well, I'm going to guess Vincent Vahar since he is Mark's arch enemy.
Yes. This only made Mark even more angry. He started plotting the murder of Vincent. He was thinking, somehow in his little mind, he thought that if the lawyer went away, the lawsuits would go away.
Okay.
So he was convinced that without their little bulldog of attorney, that everything would just fall apart. Well, that's not really how things work. You know, the lawsuits are still there. They just find somebody else.
Right.
Well, Mark was not completely stupid, though. He knew that it would be very suspicious if the attorney just wound up dead. He knew that he would need an alibi and he could not commit these murders himself. He didn't need to be tied to it at all. So this master manipulator made a plan.
Okay.
All right. He was going to hire one of his employees.
All right.
All right. His employee, he enlisted a 21-year-old man named Jeffrey Green, who was a troubled young guy, but was highly influenced by his employer. And he was like the perfect Mark for Mark.
Okay.
So Jeff Green was a social outcast, and he considered Mark his best friend, which is super fucking frightening because he would do anything for Mark. He would do anything that he asked him to do. Jeff wasn't the only idiot around. There weren't, you know, there was, I guess, plenty to go around because Jeff had some idiot friends, two local drunks with criminal records. But I think there was like a couple of petty crimes, but one of them, the real deal criminal.
He's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy. Okay. So we have Mike Hickey and Jamie Heisel.
All right.
Right. Mike Hickey was already an experienced killer. Earlier, he had kidnapped, raped, murdered, and sexually mutilated a 15-year-old girl named Kelly. He orders Mike Hickey to do this after she threatened to call the police on Heisel's drug ring.
Well, first of all, what are they doing with a 15-year-old girl? I mean, were they younger at the time?
It says 1976, so I mean, it was around the same time.
Okay, all right. So a 15-year-old girl is mutilated, murdered, sexually mutilated, raped, murdered because she was going to tell police about a drug ring.
Yes, so Heisel had a drug ring. And he ordered Mike Hickey to kill this girl.
This sounds frighteningly a little bit like our 50th upcoming episode. Okay.
All right. Yes. All right. So together, Mark was able to convince these three idiots to kill Vincent. So he got them all together and talked them into, I mean, I don't know how you convince one person, but how you convince all three of them?
Well, they're bad guys. I mean, and they've already got, obviously they got away with this, right? I mean, did they ever suffer the consequences for killing this 15-year-old child?
I don't believe so.
You don't believe mm-hmm. so? So how do you know that they did it?
Because the research told me they did, Drill Sergeant.
Okay, so, I mean, there was like no trial or anything like that at the time.
That I didn't go
okay.
into that.
Okay,
because I wasn't, I'm sorry. That wasn't what I was researching, okay. so I didn't yeah. go into it any okay. further. So the plan was to plant dynamite in the basement of the lawyer's home.
Okay.
Like, I mean,
so you had to get down into the basement yeah, in his I mean, home.
Who okay. says, let's get some dynamite and go blow up this guy's house?
Well, a large explosion would kill any evidence.
Yeah. So in the middle of the night, they would sneak in, plant the dynamite, detonate it, killing the entire family in a large explosion. All that right. was the plan. Right. So the group hoped the explosion would be blamed on a gas line.
All right.
And the police would be sidetracked for months before they could ever tie Mark to the lawyer.
So is this hypothetical or did this actually happen? They haven't done this yet.
No, this is their plan. This is their plan.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So they're thinking, okay, so if we do this, then the police will be so crazed and they're like going to forget about, you know, we're going to be able to.
Yes.
We cut ties with Mark. They're not going to be able to tie us to Mark. They're not going to tie Mark to the lawyer. Just going to think that some gas line exploded.
Right. And then the case against Mark with the water
will eventually
issues
go away.
Will go away because Vincent Vihar and his family are dead and blah, blah, yeah. blah. Okay. Gotcha.
That's their plan. That's their plan.
Okay.
So while this is their plan. While the police were distracted, Mark thought the waterboard's case against him would fall apart. And then he could use his connections within the government to cover his tracks. Seems like this is, you know, a popular plan amongst government officials these days. In return for helping construct the dynamite bomb, Mark promised to pay Heisel and Hickey and Green $2,000 each.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
And he also promised to pay Heisel and Hickey to cover their involvement in the murder of the 15-year-old.
So they're going to try to, he's going to try to cover up their involvement mm-hmm. in this murder. Yep. Because, oh, look, you're going to tell me next.
Whose body still hadn't been found.
She still hadn't been found. She's just missing at this point. Ooh.
Because Hickey was an experienced killer. He was chosen by Hopkinson to plant the bomb in the home, in the lawyer's home. So on August 1st, 1977, Hopkinson was informed that he was to be disposed by...
Deposed.
Oh.
not disposed.
Oopsie. Deposed by the lawyer in the court in like 8 days as the part of the water board's lawsuit against him. So 5 days later, on the night of August 6, 1977, Mark met with Mike Hickey at a bar saying that it was time. We got to carry out the murders. He ordered Hickey to blow up the house that night.
Okay.
So that night, Hickey drove from Fort Bridger to Evanston, which is where the lawyer lived, bringing along a large bomb made out of 30 sticks of dynamite.
Woo.
Where do you get dynamite?
I mean, I've never been in the market for dynamite, so I don't know, but I know that you can buy it because if you're trying to like blow up big things in your property, you can get it.
Really?
You can just nowadays. I don't know, you know, it's probably like involved in a database somewhere, but back then,
I mean,
you could probably get it. Who knows?
I mean, could you go down to your local?
I mean, you're asking
feed and seed and buy it.
Who knows?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the bomb was crude but powerful and contained enough explosive material to demolish an entire building. Yeah. So around 3:30 a.m. on the morning of August 7th, Hickey arrived at the lawyer's home. How are we saying that?
Bihar's
home.
Say however you want.
on 12th Street in Evanston, Wyoming. Inside the house slept Vincent Bihar, his wife Beverly, two sons, 18-year-old John and 20-year-old Tony. Yeah. So walking around to the back of the house, Hickey waited a moment or two to ensure that no one was watching him. Then he lit a 1-minute fuse on the bomb and dropped it through an open window of the house's basement. Hickey then got in his car and sped off into the night.
Wow. So he was gone before it exploded. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so sad.
So around 3:35, a loud, deafening, fiery explosion blasted through the quiet suburb. Could you imagine?
No, I couldn't. I mean, that is...
It would be like an earthquake.
That's like the makings of PTSD right there.
Oh, yeah. Right. So windows on several nearby houses were shattered. Pieces of timber ripped through other neighbors' bedrooms. I mean, this was bad.
Lord. Oh.
So I said it's just like an earthquake. And it's like no one knew what happened. Some thought it was an earthquake. Others assumed there had been a bad car accident or a gas accident. No one knew. So Evanston resident Jim Dean, who lived right around the corner from the Bihars, later recalled that he had been lying awake at night when he saw a bright flash and felt his entire house shake. Rushing outside, Dean saw a cloud of black smoke shrouding the area where the Bihar house used to be.
Oh, God.
When the smoke cleared, the young boy could hardly believe what he was seeing. The Bihar house had been completely leveled, blasted to shreds. In Dean's words, the house looked as if someone had picked it up and turned it inside out.
So this is strikingly, I mean, you know, that my two youngest sons still live at home and they're young adults. Mm-hmm. So it would be like, you know, somebody doing that to me, to my house with my husband and then me and my two children inside, 19 and 20. Aw.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
That is very sad. So police and emergency services arrived within minutes. A suffocating cloud of hot ash, smoke, and pulverized insulation still hung in the air, choking those who came near. This is a bad scene. This is bad.
Yeah. This is like a whole family was just decimated. Oh my gosh.
Well, so police officer Randy Hodson was among the first to arrive on the scene. Examining the blast site, he could hardly believe his eyes. I mean, they probably never, ever dealt with anything even remotely like this. The entire house had been blown to pieces. Not one wall remained standing. Only recognizable piece of the house was a smoldering chair that lay atop a pile of rubble. So it's like it probably flew up and came down. I mean, it's kind of... I mean, it's like after the hurricane.
Yeah.
It was kind of crazy, like, what survived and what didn't. It's like, how was that? You know, my friend had a tricycle in her attic. They didn't own one. Like, it came from somewhere else.
Yeah, I just remember, like, seeing clothes. You can drive by any neighborhood and just see their lives decimated.
I mean, it really did. I mean, it was very reminiscent of, like, World War II France.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, churches, like my husband's church that he grew up in, looked like it had been bombed.
Right.
Looked like a bomb went off. I mean, it was just...
And now we have two more storms heading our way. Pray for us.
Yay, yes. So Hodson was very surprised to hear a muffled voice calling out from help.
Oh my God.
Beneath smoking rubble.
Oh
hey,
my God.
I'm over here. Here I am. Over here, yelled the voice. This voice belonged to Vincent Bihar's oldest son, Tony.
Oh my God, I have goosebumps.
I know. Incredibly, he had not only survived the explosion, but it wasn't even the deafening blast that had woken Tony Bihar up. It was the smoke. Tony had woken up coughing as smoke filled his lungs, and only then did he realize the entire house had collapsed.
Oh my God.
I mean, it happened so quickly that's crazy that he thinks that the smoke and the stinging in his lungs is what woke him up. Wonder if he was kind of like momentarily like knocked out.
Well, you know, there's got to be like a shock of a blast.
Yeah.
I mean, your brain probably doesn't.
Like register it.
Register that kind of shock.
So Tony felt the stinging pain in his arm and smelled the metallic copper-like odor of blood, but he had no idea how badly he was injured.
Oh my gosh.
Officer Hodson scrambled over the rubble to find Tony. Hang on, fella, he yelled. I'm coming. He found Tony pinned under the rubble, unable to move. Are you hurt? He asked. I think so. I'm bleeding badly, moaned Tony. Hodson needed to know if anyone else needed rescuing. Was anyone else in the home? He asked. Yeah. The rest of the family.
Oh my God.
I know, it's nightmarish. The police scanned the rubble for Vincent Bihar, Beverly, and John, but they couldn't find any trace of them. I mean, they just were gone. That's scary. Finding the rest of the missing family would have to wait. The priority now was to get Tony Vihar out of the rubble, administer medical treatment. Rescuers spent 45 minutes sawing through rubble, moving aside pieces of debris before Tony finally could be extracted.
It's like 9/11 when they were
He was badly bruised, cut, suffered eardrum damage, cut eye, burns all over his body, lung and throat damage from smoke inhalation, and obviously he was in a state of shock. Although gravely injured, Tony would survive his wounds and eventually made a full recovery.
Oh, thank goodness. But he's the only one. Aw.
As
they can't see you shake your head. We're not on film.
So as they continued to search the ruined house, police found the Vihar's dog and cat, petrified and badly shaken, but both alive.
Oh, they're alive. Okay.
They, too, were removed from the scene and survived, but no one else from the family would be so lucky. Vincent, Beverly, and John never made it out of the house alive. They all died instantly when the bomb exploded. Only sheer luck had prevented Tony from joining them.
All right, so, but did they find their bodies, or were they blasted to bits, or do you know? They don't see you shaking your head, no.
Sorry, no. I mean, we might find out a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
Mark had just committed his first known murders.
Okay.
Ironically, Hopkinson ended up stiffing his own hitmen. In the end, Mike Hickey never received his $2,000 as promised for carrying out the bombing.
What?
Whoa. This guy is a freaking psycho. Listen, I don't know if I can handle much more of this excitement. So let's stop and carry on this episode next week, 45.2. What do you say? Thank you so much, Cindy, for telling us about Mark Hopkinson and how he's terrorizing this town. Really appreciate it. It's a great story. All right, listeners, don't forget to send us your screenshots of your 5-star rating and a comment and your comment to a truecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We are really excited about giving away goodies for a 50th episode giveaway, and we really want you to win. Thanks so much for listening to this week's murder. We appreciate sharing our passion with you, and we thank you for your support. If you'd like to support us even further, please consider subscribing to our podcast and giving us a 5-star rating and a comment. Your subscription and ratings are essential to our success. You can do this on your favorite platform. For more information and links to Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages, visit our website at itwasn'tmetruecrime.com. We are so grateful to spend our time together to share murderous stories. Thank you so much again for your support. Please recommend It Wasn't Me to your true crime loving friends and family. Also, thank you to our Patreon supporters. You are the extra. You too can become one of our beloved patrons by signing up at patreon.com/itwasn'tmepod. Thanks again, guys, and remember, it wasn't me.